Welcome to the Daily Business Hustle podcast. My name is Alexander Vitkin. I'm the creator and founder of the Daily Business Hustle. On this podcast, I share with you my top unbiased business advice, sales advice, and I talk to the world's top experts in their fields related to business.
So, hey, welcome. This is Alexander Vitkin, and today I'm here with Ty Lopez. He agreed to do an interview with me, and Ty goes around the world. He finds the best people in certain industries, and he talks them into doing 50-50 deals with them. He also does business with billionaires. He runs a 1.5 million person book of the day club on his website. He's done a TED talk. He speaks at top universities in the world. Ty wants to produce 300 millionaires per year. That's his current goal. And he's working on a magazine, The Grand Theory of Everything. He's co-authoring a paper on experience of highly attractive women. He's started 12 companies. He surrounds himself by guys ahead of him, mentor him. He has a 67-step plan to build millionaires. And he reads one book per day, which is quite amazing. So welcome, Ty.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me here. And it's a warm day in the Hollywood Hills, so it's always nice. I would show you the view, but I don't think, let's see here. There you go. You can't see me, but it's nice today. It's not
wow.
Too hazy.
That's all
you can see out 35 miles from Hollywood from my house. So. But if I can't, I try to get it in the background, but it's too dark while I'm there. So you'll just have to see my ugly face instead. Not as good as the view.
So Ty, so what are some of the things people have to change about their thought process to become wealthy in your experience?
So, you know, you're talking, it's funny you asked this question. Yesterday I was at Barnes & Noble and I read a book a day, so I'm constantly looking for new books, and I picked up a book on why we make mistakes in terms of how we think. There's a famous book by Charlie Munger, The Billionaire, and he basically has listed out 25 cognitive biases that cause humans to make misjudgments and mistakes. So the way your mind works is our brain was adapted for a completely different environment than we live in now. So there was a famous anthropologist named Robin Dunbar, and I think that from Yale, and the conclusion was this concept of Dunbar's number, which is we grew up genetically. The DNA of our brain evolved and adapted around groups of 150 to 250 people, right? We lived 100,000 years ago. We lived in Africa on the savannah. Now we live, like I said, I showed you a picture, 14 million people out there. So our brain's really adapted to small groups, but now we live in huge environments. So what happens is, you create what's called evolutionary mismatch, which means our brains are making decisions based on 150 person groups, but we live in a world of 14 million, so we're constantly making mistakes. All right, so we moved here. I've got three offices in my house. I'm into this new thing. This is my gym, my garage office. So I'm actually pioneering. I want to write a book called The Garage Office, but it's a way that I don't sit that much. So you can see I got my training stuff and I'll show you over here. Got my full workout gym. Got my basketball goal outside. So it's a way that you can, work. And then I got my board where I meet with my people. So anyway, so we were talking about evolutionary. You were asking me, you know, what people have to change in terms of their mentality. If they want to be, I talk about the good life, you know, the good life's health, wealth, love, and happiness. How do you get those four? That's what everybody wants. So it starts in the brain, and I don't mean that in a cheesy way. The great billionaire, one of my mentors, Charlie Munger, he says, there's 25 cognitive biases in the human brain that cause us to make mistakes. If you read like Dr. David Buss, in my book club, I think he's written the best book of our time. It's called Evolutionary Psychology. It's a textbook. And there's this concept of Dunbar's number. Robin Dunbar, the anthropologist, she said that our brain We evolve in groups of about 150 to 200 people. But I live in Los Angeles, Hollywood, where there's 14 million people. So what happens is the adaptions of our mind are not able to handle the load, all the choices. You know, it's very, very Schwartz wrote the book, The Paradox of Choice. We're bombarded at every side. So if you're not careful, you're going to go from one mistake to another over and over. And the secret to wealth, health, whatever it is you want, changing the world, is making very few mistakes. I know there's this notion out there that, oh, make lots of mistakes, you only learn from your mistakes. Well, that's true. Like Warren Buffett says, you only learn from your mistakes, but it's a hell of a lot easier to learn from other people's mistakes. So what you really want to do is be studying other people's mistakes so that you make very few. I was reading an article in Entrepreneur Magazine, and a guy was saying, it was a debate. They showed two different sides. And this one psychologist, neurologist, was saying that the way the brain works is every time you succeed, you have new testosterone and dopamine receptors open up in your brain. So you succeed, those reward chemicals are released. Dopamine's a reward chemical. Testosterone is kind of a masculine hormone. And those receptors receive them. And then, of course, after, you know, in the NBA championship or make $1 million, whatever you do, the victory and the chemicals kind of go away. But he says those receptors stay. This is very fascinating. So people who don't make a lot of mistakes, who go from one win to another win, they actually are rewiring their brain to expect wins. So what they find is people who have not made a lot of mistakes, who have won a lot, who have had victory in whatever they did, whether it's business, love, so on, the winners keep winning because they're more ambitious. So you don't want to lose. That's a myth in the world. Now, you will lose occasionally. You can lose a few battles, but you want to win the war. So you start with the brain. The brain is what makes Homo sapiens, which what makes us different from everything else. We've got tremendous power. Even the least intelligent person on this call is more intelligent than the most powerful computer. You know, there's that famous chess player, Garry Kasparov, who played against Deep Blue, the supercomputer, and he beat the supercomputer. In fact, the only time that supercomputer ever beat the great chess master was when 20 chess masters were constantly tweaking the big Deep Blue computer. Then they finally could beat this one man. So your brain has tremendous power, but if you're not careful, it all works against you. For example, the misweighting bias. The average person down there on Sunset Boulevard, all they're thinking about all day is, you know, does this girl like me? What should I eat for dinner? What should I blah, blah, blah? You know, I wonder if I should wear my red outfit tomorrow, my blue outfit. What they're not thinking about is, how can I change my crappy life? That's what you should be thinking about. So right there, it's a misweighting bias. We're misweighting what's important. Think about yesterday in your life. What did you do yesterday? Did you do anything that contributes to massive change, whether it be civilization change, global change, or changing your life? Did you build real wealth yesterday? Did you go to bed a lot smarter than you are today? Most people, the answer is no. Why? Because they're misweighting bias. There's tons of other bias. There's availability of bias, association bias, Kantian fairness bias, Lollapalooza. There's all these different biases. I don't have time to go through all of them. But truth be told, if you can think with a clearer head, with more logic than the average person, and you continually do that, it's like playing poker. So you play poker. I don't really like poker, but my brother's a great poker player, right? The guy who plays the statistically best hand over and over will win. If you play the best poker guy in the world, he might get a pair of twos and you start out with, you know, a pair of aces. But that's luck. That's one time. Over time, like Charlie Munger says, you get what you deserve. Whatever your income is right now, I bet you deserve it. That's the problem in the world now. People can't put the two and two together and start seeing clearly, because one of the cognitive biases is delusion. Our mind loves to delude us. In extreme cases, that creates schizophrenia. But for most of us, we live in a deluded state because of fear, which is another part of the human brain. There's an amygdala part of your brain. That amygdala is the fear center. If you got bit by a dog when you're 2 years old, when you're 50 years old, you might still be afraid of a little chihuahua, even though logically
you know you could kick that chihuahua, you know, and it couldn't bite you at all when you're 50 years old. But yet that amygdala, where we store our emotional center, is so strong that it sabotages most people. I'm actually reading a book now called Inheritance. It's about genetics, and it's basically saying if you were bullied when you were like 14 or 15 years old, you may never recover from that. Genetically, it may change even how you are at a genetic level. Now, there is some good research that you can create fear annihilation memories, but most people are operating, fear is the strongest human emotion, without a doubt, right? Reward is very strong, but fear is what drives us. And it should, because 100 false alarms are better than one death. So it's better for people to be neurotic from an evolutionary standpoint than it is for people to be relaxed, because the neurotic person doesn't walk off a bridge or get bit by a dog or put their hand on a stove and burn themselves. But all of this wiring we have in our brain is pretty much made for our evolution 100,000 years ago to live on the African savanna. It's not that helpful today. That's why, one of the most controversial, I got this podcast. It's called, Ty Lopez, Grand Theory of Everything. And one of the most controversial podcasts I ever did was this concept of the answers are not within. Most people are hearing this BS out there in the world that the answers are all within, go within. Well, at a certain level, there's some truth to that. The answers are within in terms of knowing when I need to drink water. Like if I feel thirsty, the answer's within. You'll feel it, you drink. But in terms of making a $1 million company, or in terms of in the modern world knowing who you should date, or who you should befriend, or who you should make a business partner, or who you should invest in, it's all out of whack. You can't use within. That's why I've had people challenge me. I say, show me any great person that got it from within. And people, I had a guy say, what about Tesla? Well, I went to Tesla's Wikipedia page, read it. He had a mathematician who was his mentor. He went to university, has a photogenic memory. Somebody brought up Eckhart Tolle, the spiritual guy that's on Oprah and one of the best-selling authors. Read Eckhart Tolle. All he did was learn from other people. The answers are from without. So if you want to know what you got to do, you need to follow what one of – I've had five men, three millionaires, and not just millionaires, but world civilization-changing kind of guys. And I've had two that were at the billionaire status. And now I have 12 business partners, anywhere from guys making $1 million a month to $1 million a day. And so I've learned a lot from these guys. And as an investor now, I'm lucky to be able to get around people like this. And – one thing that I've learned is 100% of the time, my rich friends versus my rich friends think differently. It definitely starts in the brain. It's not like The Secret, that book, The Secret. I don't really believe in The Secret from the standpoint that, The Secret is much more about optimism and kind of projecting yourself, which I don't really believe, but it is about the mind. This is what gives us tremendous power. So you got to find what Charlie Munger does, which is interesting. He keeps a spreadsheet of the 25 cognitive biases that that have caused him to make mistakes. And every time he has a major life decision, he goes through each one. Am I falling prey to misweighting? Am I making this more important than it is? Am I falling, to Pavlovian response? Meaning, have I had past success and I think that success will go into the future? So I'm like a dog going, ooh, I want, this treat again. Am I falling prey to association bias? Am I buying Pepsi just because, some celebrity's holding a Pepsi can? You don't want to be that. There's this old saying, if you're in a room and you don't know who the sucker is, you're the sucker. What he's basically doing with his spreadsheet is removing ignorance and removing the sucker factor, so he's never the sucker. That's what you have to do if you want the good life. If you want to be healthy, wealthy, find love and happiness, that's the formula.
Very interesting. So what does wealth actually mean to you? What is it for you exactly?
Well, I think at some level you can be very esoteric about wealth and you could say, money, it's different to different people. There's obviously different kinds of wealth. When I define it in the good life, I'm a practical guy. It's access to scarce resources. In the world we live in, the definition of scarce resources is generally cash, currency, money, right? There's a lot of myths about money. Whenever you hit on something important, the delusion factor in the world goes up. If you go on the street and have a conversation with somebody, like I said, I'm Dr. David Buss is a friend of mine. He's the preeminent evolutionary psychologist. When he talks about the truth, it's in terms of, now truth is a hard word, but when he shows the results of the studies that he's doing on human relationships and love, people go nuts and get mad at him. There's a high delusion factor around love. There's also a very high delusion factor around wealth, because wealth is important, and therefore the average person generally doesn't find it, and their brain creates delusion to lower the pain. The brain, your brain doesn't want to constantly bombard you with, you failed, you don't have any money, you're in scarcity. So it basically makes up stories. It says, I read once in National Geographic the five reactions to other people's wealth. They were studying India, where you have huge disparities between the rich and the poor. And they were saying, how do the poor not rise up and revolt against the rich? And they were saying, well, it's because the human mind of a poor person in India, this is what this article said, basically deludes itself. So it creates like five different stories. One of them is the rich guy got lucky. The rich guy must have done something like steal his money. The rich guy is way more intelligent than them, about all these things. What your mind doesn't want to say is that guy just did what I wouldn't do, right? And I'm not oversimplifying. There are definitely examples where rich people, you know, there's 1,400 billionaires in the world, about 1,000 of them just inherited their money. So, you know, there's definitely a luck factor, just being born healthy. Warren Buffett says if you're born healthy in a first world country, you already won the evolutionary lottery. So to the extent that there is luck when it comes to wealth, there's still a heavy delusion factor. So when you ask me this question, what is wealth? I like to keep it simple. Wealth is access to scarce resources, which is generally money in your bank account. The person who has sufficient money in their bank account will survive better than someone who doesn't. Don't ever listen to anybody. Even Mother Teresa, who was extremely, you know, she took a vow of poverty. She was a world-changing, amazing person. She spent most of her time fundraising. She needed access. She needed cash. She needed access to scarce resources. So you must go through. There's four basic stages of money. There is scarcity, and that's what most people are. There's a famous Nobel Prize winning scientist named, I think his name, Daniel Kahneman. And he basically says that if you make less than $80,000 in America, your happiness will be lower than if you are making $80,000 or more. He says you don't need to make $100 million to be happy, but there is a minimum threshold. So below that threshold, some people listen to this, you're below the threshold. You're in what I call scarcity. You must move out of scarcity. Even if you say, oh, I don't care about money, you still got to move out of scarcity. Beethoven was one of the great musicians of all time, but he lived a crappy quality of life because he never had money. He was always under stress from money because he spent money faster than he made it. So he was in a place of scarcity. So the next stage is financial independence. You got to at least get to financial independence. In America, depending on what country you're in, America is, you know, about $80,000 to $120,000 a year for a single person. Okay, that's independence. Beyond that, the next stage I call prosperity. You know, that's anywhere from $120 to $1 million a year. That's where your prosperity. Beyond that, you start getting into what I call wealth and impact. So you look at someone like Bill Gates, you know, all the governments in the world, United States, I think the GDP of the United States is somewhere around $15 trillion. It's the same GDP as Europe. Right. America makes about the same money as all of Europe combined. So Bill Gates did not have as much money as the U.S. government. He did not have as much money as the EU. But yet one man is eradicating malaria. He's working on tuberculosis. He's working on smallpox. He's, you know, doing tremendous changes for the good of civilization with not that much money. I mean, he had a net worth of $60 billion. You can hear an airplane here. We have lots of helicopters and stuff flying over, but
advantage of living on a hill.
What?
Advantage of living on a hill.
Chase the people. So wealth creates the ability to have impact, both for good or bad. Muammar Gaddafi, the Libyan dictator who's now dead, who was a horrible guy. I just read this book about Muammar Gaddafi. He was literally insane person. I mean, we all hear about Hitler being insane. Muammar Gaddafi, at some level, was probably equally insane. And he had a tremendous amount of money. He had a couple $1 billion net worth. And so you can see he had impact. He had negative impact on Libya. Bill Gates, for good or bad, I'm sure he makes some mistakes. He's human. But in general direction and momentum, he, like I said, if he eradicates malaria, malaria has killed probably more people than almost anything in human history, one of the leading causes of death. So impact can come from massive wealth. So if you're listening to this, whatever stage you're in, I recommend you continually look to go up, not necessarily out of greed. Look, guys, I was just at the Berkshire Hathaway meeting. It was pretty cool. I was standing down on the floor there. I'm a shareholder. 10 feet away from me was Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, and Charlie Munger. Three guys that control $1 trillion. I think about it, almost $1 trillion of business valuation. And I was thinking, that's how the world's going. And you hear a lot of lamenting about that, the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer. What's actually happening is very controversial, so I hope I won't get a million, letters of hate mail. But what's happening is the rich are getting richer, but so are the poor. The middle class in the world is on the rise massively. There was a guy named Malthus, and he had this philosophy in the 1800s, they call it Malthusian, which is the world's end, the world's a horrible place, but it turned out to be wrong. The population's going up, which is giving us statistically more geniuses to solve the problem. You might be one of those people to solve civilization's problem and move civilization forward. And at the same time, you can have a good life. You can have health, wealth, love, and happiness. We live in the best of all times. But you must have a firm grasp on what wealth means. You must understand money. You must understand the acquisition of resources both for yourself and for the improvement of civilization. I always say you can have a little selfish goal and you can have a goal that's not so selfish. So wherever you are, there is still a place for you to move up chain when it comes to wealth and resources. So you got to make some money. If you want health, people statistically that have more money are healthier. They live long. People who have more money obviously are more successful in business. It takes capital to grow your business. If you've got a good idea, you want some money. Love. One of the common, I'm an investor in some of the largest dating sites in the world. So, I'm an investor in some of the largest dating sites in the world. I own sites that've got millions of members, hundreds of millions, I think about 185 million messages sent back and forth that I have at my fingertips to analyze data. And one of the most common reasons that humans get divorced, men and women, is over financial stress. So, this thing of money is more than just trying to get Ferraris and Maseratis and live in mansions. I've done everything. I lived at the Amish for 2.5 years. I spent 10 years on a farm. I've spent time in India at a leper colony, and I've lived in a mansion and had Ferraris and Maseratis in Beverly Hills and Hollywood. And no matter what, resources are still important. Whether I live at the Amish with no electricity, you still, to survive as a human, as an organism on this planet, you got to understand, you have to have wealth, and to get wealth, you have to understand it. And that's one of the biggest problems. Again, back to the mind. Most people are not sharp because their mind is completely devoted to thinking about Game of Thrones and who won the baseball game and does this girl like me and, is my boss going to give me a raise, to forget the big picture, which is understanding those big picture foundational things. And one of them is wealth, without a doubt.
And how do you balance all these parts of your life? And what do you prioritize personally?
So it's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? So you got to get health right. If you don't feel good, you're not going to make any money and you're not going to find quality date. Love, and you're definitely not going to be happy. So obviously it starts with health, without a doubt. I think most people... Here's good news about health. Everything we need to know about health is almost discovered in terms of fitness. If you're a guy or girl, you need to lift weights. You need to cut out processed food, eat grass-fed stuff. I spent 2.5 years with Joel Salatin, kind of the pioneer of grass-fed farming and all that. So that's pretty simple. and drink water and sleep a lot. I just did an interview with Ben Greenfield. He's a voted, 100 most influential guys in the health field, and just wrote a New York Times bestselling book called Beyond Endurance. And I asked him, what's the most important thing to be healthy? He's like, rest. You need to sleep a lot, which goes back to this hunter-gatherer. Hunter-gatherers used to work hard and then sleep a lot. So you need to sleep a lot, which is another problem in the modern world. We're overstimulated, right? You try to go to sleep with your iPhone, your Instagram, TV's on, YouTube's playing, so people are going nuts now. You got to be able to take control. There's a good book called Managing Oneself by Peter Drucker. You got to be able to manage yourself. Right? You got to be able to do the things that other people won't do. Most people won't manage themselves. They're basically ants being led along by a few alpha people. There's the sucker and the leader. And I don't mean that in a degrading way. It's just the way the world is. I don't know why it is this way. I didn't make it this way. But one of the 67 steps to becoming a millionaire, you have to read the obvious signs. Look around you in the world. Does the world look like it's 100% about justice? No. Should you try to be fair? Of course. But is the world at a deepest level completely about justice? No. What the world's completely about is exactly what Charles Darwin said. He said, it's not the strongest or the most intelligent that survive, but it's the most adaptable, the most willing to read their environment and change. So health, 60% of people in America are either obese or overweight. You can't be that person. And people don't like to hear that message. You got to toughen up. You got to toughen up a little bit. Secondly, you got to make money. Simple as that. You're asking how to prioritize. And third, to be happy, you got to find love. There's a good book by Sigmund Freud called Civilization and Its Discontents. And he said there's about 9 ways that humans try to find happiness, whether it be through love, whether it be chemicals like drugs, alcohol. Some people try to do it through intellectual pursuits. There's all these various ways that we try to stimulate a reward response from our brain. The truth is, life is kind of like a good bowl of soup. A good bowl of soup has not just chicken only, not just broth only, not just carrots only. It has a mix and a proper blend. And what Freud says better than I could ever try to expound here is, in Civilization and Discontents, he says, you got to find your constitution, who you are, what naturally stimulates you, and you got to build a blend. There's a good book called Happiness Hypothesis by Jonathan Haidt, and he says, the same kind of concept. He studied happiness back from Socrates to our modern understanding. And he says it's the same thing. It's a blend that you must find. So I was saying, for every person, you find this concept. I call it your destiny. I don't mean it in a cheesy way. You got to find your body destiny. Some people are built like runners. Some people are built like power lifters. Don't try, if you're built stocky, don't try to be an endurance runner. Go for what you're, one of my mentors, Mike Murphy, he was a very wealthy guy from Ireland. He said, Ty, it's all about horses for courses. He was saying, if you buy racehorses, if the track is long, you want a horse that has a lot of endurance, doesn't sprint too fast at the beginning and get tired. If you have a track that's short, you want a horse that puts its all real fast. It's the same way with your destiny. So you have a health destiny, which is around that natural constitution of your body. The second thing that you have is a wealth destiny. So here I am on my phone, a little pixelated, I know, but I was saying, you have this business destiny. Warren Buffett knew from 7 years old he wanted to allocate capital. That was his thing, allocation of capital. And he went on and became a billionaire 50 years later, like 57, I think he was, when he became a billionaire. So he's naturally suited for hardcore business. That may or may not be you. There's people that are not as suited to make billions, but you might be able to make a million, or you might be able to make 100,000 a year, whatever that is. You got to find it. Don't undercut yourself. Some people are naturally like to dream low, small. Conrad Hilton, the guy who started the Hilton Empire hotels, he says, dream big. So you can dream big, but you can be realistic. Like John Wooden says, at the same time, there's a combination of reality and, dreaming big. So most people, it's obvious at some level. So here's how I think you should find your destiny. Let me make this so you don't see my garage. There we go. The way to find your business destiny, health destiny, love destiny, whatever it is, right?
number one, obviously Hugh Hefner in Love had a different destiny than, I don't know, Mahatma Gandhi or Elvis or whoever, right? But it's all about knowing what your destiny is. The younger you can figure out your destiny, the bigger impact you'll have on the world. It's one of the biggest problems in the world. People go to high school, college, they still come out 22, 23 years old. They have no idea what they're going to do. That can't be you. That's what everybody else is. If you want to be a civilization-changing person living the good life, you better figure out what you should do, and you better do it fast because it takes a long time. It took Bill Gates. He started at 12 and finished at 31. I mean, he made a billion by 31, 19 years. And for 10 years, age 20 to age 30, he said, I never took one day off, not even one. Most people don't have the focus they need for success. Focus comes from having a simple one-sentence plan. Warren Buffett at 7 knew he wanted to be an investor. He could say, I want to be an investor. Bill Gates says, I invest in software. You can find that simple thing like that, that simple answer. You must find it. So here's how you find your business destiny. Let's focus on business. The way you do that is you ask yourself four questions and try to find where what they all have in common, the intersection of all four. So number one is, what did you grow up around? Sometimes you can get clues from that. You know, I'm in the education business. I'm investing now in education-based stuff, but it's no coincidence that I was raised by, in some ways, I was raised by my mom. My dad was in prison when I was born, but my grandma was a professor, and so was my grandfather, and they helped raise me. So I was around education, books, knowledge, learning. It was hardwired in my brain from a young age. For you, it might have been you had parents who are doctors. Maybe you had parents who are, you know, in the restaurant business, the hotel business. Not everybody gets that. Not everybody's lucky enough to have parents that were worth a damn. A lot of parents are, you know, fools. So if you, hopefully some of you are lucky enough to be able to get some clues from your upbringing. Don't ignore your upbringing. It can give you a head start. We live in a world of 7 billion people. It's competitive out there. Any edge you can have will be helpful, and it will help you find your business destiny. So that's number one. Number two, you want to look for things that Peter Drucker calls feedback analysis. You want to look for things with feedback analysis that unbiased people have always complimented you on since you were young. So for some of you, it's your smile. For us, for me, it was reading, and it's no coincidence that, you know, I've got this book club. I do, it's not really a business, but I do it for other reasons. I got 1.5 million people in 40 countries on this, where I read a book a day and put a summary out. So, you know, that could be, that for me was obvious. I've been complimented from 4 or 5 years old. Oh, you read so much and blah, blah, blah. So you turn that into part of your business destiny. The third thing is what you've been doing for the last 10 years. Do not ignore one of the biggest mistakes. I mean, I get hired. People pay me $250,000 to come consult for their business for a couple months. Number one mistake entrepreneurs make, without a doubt, is getting good at something and then moving on. Don't move on. David Ogilvy, the great advertising guy, the one that they built the TV show Mad Men around, he says, you know, at best, most people have only the opportunity to have two different careers. You only have time to get good at two things. You know, Malcolm Gladwell wrote in this book, Outliers, that it takes about 10,000 hours to get good at something. But that's actually an understatement. It takes more like the average chess player, basketball player. It takes 14,000 hours. You're talking 12 to 20 years to get good at something. You only have so much time. And a lot of people, I hear this myth out there. People go, oh, I'm good at lots of stuff. I'm like, no, you're not. You think you're Leonardo da Vinci? Leonardo da Vinci was good at lots of stuff. How many Leonardo da Vincis are there in the world? Once every 500 years? Don't be too arrogant. You must stay humble and go, you know what? I think I'm good at a lot. I mean, watch American Idol. I call it American Idol syndrome. People think they can sing. In the shower, they sound good. But the rest of the world's like, shut up. In the same way, if you think you've got so many skills, if you're like, oh, Ty, you can't believe all that. I'm good at marketing and I'm good at that. I'm like, no, you're not. What you are is you're used to being around subpar people. So when you compare yourself to them, that's called the contrast bias. You think you're good. But boy, you get in the big leagues. If you think you can play basketball, come here and, you know, try out for the Los Angeles Lakers. Try out for the Miami Heat. You think you can play soccer, you know, try out for, I don't know soccer, but I know everybody likes that in the world. Try out for Manchester United. That's the test. And the business world of making money, you're competing with big boys. So at best, one of my business partners once told me, he's not quite a billionaire, but pretty close to billionaire, self-made. And he said, I was telling him all these ideas I had. I was like, oh, I'm going to do this and this and this. And he looked at me. I was sitting in his house. He has a 40,000 square foot house, which is massive. And he said to me, he said, Ty, just get good at one thing. He said, I got good at one thing and I made hundreds of millions of dollars. So what have you been doing for the last 10 years? Don't ignore that. That's your momentum. That's your advantage. Then lastly, what can you talk about effortlessly when you're out with your friends on a Saturday night? That's the, because you will need passion and curiosity. People say do what you love. I'm not such a big believer in do what you love. I was out with one of my buddies last Saturday at the W Hotel. They have a jazz night, and he's in the Guinness Book World Records for top five IQ. He's one of the smartest people on the planet now, and he also is one of the largest shareholders of a little company, I say that jokingly, called Grand Theft Auto. He helped build that site, which is a $9 billion company. And he said to me, you know, Ty, I'm not a big believer in doing what you love. And so I can get into that for other reasons. Basically, one of my mentors said, Ty, it's like getting married for lust. You marry who you lust after. After a few years, the lust goes away, and all that you're left with is whoever you want to be. You know, you're just left with an average person, a friend, right? So he said, don't marry who you love, marry who you like. In the same way in business, don't focus on, I got into the nightclub business when I was young, and I used to like salsa dancing, and I was like, ooh, I'm going to make a club, and I made clubs all about that. And guess what? That was the last time I ever went salsa dancing again, because once you do it for a business, it's not as fun anymore. So what you should focus on is what you have energy around. What do you have curiosity around? What do you like to talk about? Now, hopefully you need some love for it. Don't get me wrong. You don't want to marry somebody you don't love at all. And in the same way, you don't want to get into business for something you don't at least have, you know, some feelings for, quote unquote. But in the big picture, you need to be focused on something you have curiosity about, that you talk about when you're just having your downtime. Because ultimately, there's this saying that Picasso says, I'll paraphrase it. He said, you got to avoid the dichotomy. The dichotomy is doing what you don't love in order to make money to do something you do love. You don't want that life. Joel Salatin told me a saying he lives by. If you have to go on a vacation from your job, you should never come back. So as you're looking at your destiny, you're looking at these four things, what you grew up around, what you've been complimented on by third party. Remember, it can't be what your parents complimented or your best friends. They're biased. What unbiased people have consistently from 5 years old, 10 years old, 15 years old complimented you on. Thirdly, what you've been doing the last 10 years. If you've been working in the restaurant business for the last 10 years, it doesn't mean you need to be a waiter for the rest of your life or a server, but you could build an empire. I read Ray A. Kroc's book. He spent 20 years in the food industry, 30 years before he built McDonald's into the biggest brand in the world and became the richest man in America. But he built off the past 10 years, the past 20 years, the past 30. Don't ignore it. Most people do. It's a fool's mistake. And then the last one, what do you have curiosity and energy around so much that you talk about it even when you're not working? If you can find where those four areas intersect, you're probably finding your unique business destiny. Do not shy away from that. Man, if I could go back and have somebody shape me. I mean, at 16 years old, I knew what I was good at. It was obvious. And I diverged away from it for a while. It was a big mistake. Do not diverge. Get on one thing. If you're young listening to this, don't believe the myth that you got to be old to know. That's a bunch of BS. You probably, Alan Nation, one of my mentors said, Ty, what did you want to do at 14? That's probably what you should be doing. That's when your mind was clearest, most clear. By the way, I've been in Mensa for a long time, the High IQ Society, and there's a Mensa bulletin I got once which said your IQ peaks around 14 years old. That's called senescence bias. Your brain goes down as you get older. You can get wiser, you can get some experience, but overall computing power and what you need, that's why most people are successful young. There are people like Ray Kroc or Colonel Sanders that started Kentucky Fried Chicken that do it much later in life, but the general pattern is to do your destiny at a very young age. So if you're listening to this and you're 18, jump on it, man. I started before 18. I got a business partner who sold a company. He started at 14, sold a company for $100 million before he's 25. Start, if you're listening to this and you're 50, well, better late than never, right? You better jump on it quick, though. Quick, quick, quick. Be quick, but don't be in a hurry. Don't quit your job, you know, instantly today, but make momentum immediately towards your destiny. And never, ever, ever, once you're sure you're on your destiny, never completely lose that. You might need to adjust. It's like the scientific theory. You realize you should be here. Don't be so stubborn that you pound your head against the wall of a wall that's not opening and making way for you. You may need to adjust. But the end goal, that destiny that you're shooting for me, it's very simple. I'm focused on spreading good ideas through mass media. That's my destiny in business. So teaching, spreading good ideas, whether they're my own ideas, most of them, unfortunately, are not my own ideas. I learn from other people. Sometimes I have an original thought, but most of my good thoughts are me listening to other people and blending different amazing people together. It's not that I'm so smart. You don't even have to be so smart. You can stand on the shoulders of giants, like Sir Isaac Newton said. So for me, that's an example of my destiny. So I'm interested in things like selling education products online. I'm interested in magazines. I'm interested in getting TV shows that focus on what's called edutainment, where they're educational, but you're also getting entertained at the same time. I want to use mass media. I want to use radio, TV, movies, books, magazines, things that can reach millions of people like that. That's my destiny. For some of you, your destiny is to help people lose weight. For others of you, your destiny is to raise amazing children. For some of you, your destiny is to make $1 billion. I don't know what it is because it's diverse for many people, but I do know in some ways it's more similar than you think. You're going to have to go down the narrow path. You have to do things that most, you know, when I was younger, I worked at GE Capital, and my boss and mentor there, Al Howe, he told me, he said, Ty, I've been around a lot of millionaires. And he one of the top financial guys in America. And he said, you know, Ty, what I found is the millionaires, the highly successful people. And by the way, for some of you, being a millionaire is not your goal. Like I said, Martin Luther King Jr., he accomplished more than most millionaires I've ever met. You don't need to look down on money, but for some of you, it's something altruistic. It's something charitable. But the same rules that I'm talking about now apply. You must go. Wide is the path that leads to destruction, and most people go on it. And narrow is the path that leads to what you want, and few people go on it. You must go on that narrow path. When other people are out vacationing, you should be at home working. Doesn't mean you can never vacation. It just means don't be influenced by one of the cognitive biases, which is social proof. Doesn't matter if other people are. One of my best friends makes $1 million a day. He was down at my house and we were talking about going to a movie, and he's like, you know what? I got to work today. I got something I'm working on. I'm building an empire. I'm changing civilization with what I'm doing. And he said, you know what I learned? Recreation is overrated. That's why I don't like, well, I know we're going to talk about this. So that's why I'm not a big fan of the 4-hour work week. It's encouraging the wrong mentality. Your mentality should be like the Spartans. You want to change the world, man. Who do you want to be? Who do you want to be? Never forget. Go straight to the top. You, and my advice to people here, you want to be the next Oprah. You want to be the next Mahatma Gandhi. You want to be the next Nelson Mandela. You want to be the next Steve Jobs, the next Bill Gates, the next Ray Kroc, the next Hilton, the next Sam Walton. That's what the world needs. The next Dalai Lama, right? Go for big things. The next Buddha, the next Jesus, the next Caesar. You know, all these big dreams. We have a world where everybody's small-minded. Why be small-minded? You got the same amount of time. Now, not everybody has the same amount of gifts. Like John Wooden said, God only made one Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You know, he was 7'2" and one of the great basketball players of all time. Not everybody had that destiny. You're not in a competition with other people. You're in a competition with your capacity. What's your capacity? Some people's capacity is this much, and they fail if they only get this far. Some people's capacity is small. And they can be more of a success than someone who only gets half of their destiny. Get 100% of your destiny. Most of us, that's very hard. I wish I had 100% of my destiny, but I didn't have somebody telling me what I'm telling you right now. Back when I was 18, it's easy to get off the path. Luckily, I had 5 mentors that got me back on the path relatively quickly. If you haven't had a mentor, you better get one. Humans learn not audio, not visual, not kinesthetic. They learn through osmosis. Success rubs off on you. How many hours a day did you spend yesterday with somebody 20 years ahead of you where you want to be, right? Imagine how your life would – I just did a TED Talk and I talked about this. Imagine what your life would be if today you were in partnership on a new company with Bill Gates. Think of the odds of your success. Think of right now. Your 401k or how you were investing your money, you were buddies with Warren Buffett, and he was showing you how. Think of how happy you would be if you had been coached by the Dalai Lama for the last couple of years, and he'd been showing you how to find happiness in the little things. Think of the injustices and the revolution you'd be causing in the world if you were working with Mother Teresa. Those can be your mentors. You have books, YouTube's there. You could spend all your time and listen to all of these people's works. We don't live in the 1700s. It's like the book says, The Tale of Two Cities. We live in the best of times and the worst of times. You create whatever you want. Most people, like I said, they fall prey to what Peter Drucker, the great business guru, calls disabling ignorance. They go, well, you know, the world sucks now. We all watch Kardashians and Facebook and da-da-da, and everybody's on their phone and nobody has friends. Well, that's your reality. That's not my reality. Facebook, to me, becomes a tool towards the destiny that I want. One of the 67 things, and by the way, if people want that 67 thing, I don't know if I should plug this. I'm not making any money on it. It's on my site, tailopez.com, T-A-I-L-O-P-E-Z.com. There's a link, and you can get – I'll lay out for you these 67 things. I've been to 51 countries, you know, worked with millionaires and billionaires, taught at some of the top business schools. I just came back from London Business School. Did the keynote speech at their entrepreneur conference, which is, I didn't realize London Business School is the number two business school after Harvard in the world. And but the same message needs to be heard there. We live in a world where people go to college but don't know anything. First rule on my board is we got to be worth a damn. Most people aren't worth a damn. You become worth a damn by changing your mentality and be going outward and learning from great people. The law of 33%. 33% of your time should be spent with people below you, 33% of people on your level, and 33% ahead of you. You spend 33% of your time with people below you because you can help them, you can mentor them, and they make you feel good about yourself, right? It's good to know there's somebody doing worse than you. Then you spend 33% of your time around people on your level. Those people, like Mahatma Gandhi I just finished his autobiography, and he talks about, as you're on the rise to the top, it will be lonely. You need people who are friends, and those friends are people generally on your level. You don't intimidate them, they don't intimidate you. And lastly, the last and hardest part is you must spend 3 hours a day, if you can, 30 minutes is better than nothing, with people 20 years ahead of you. Those people will push you and prod you, make you feel uncomfortable. It's like lifting heavy weights. That's where the burn comes from. That's where the muscle growth comes from. You need resistance. And most people aren't willing to do that because we live in a world full of luxury and focused on YOLO and focused on all this stupid stuff. Remember, the media, I live here in the heart of it, Hollywood. They do not have your best interests at heart. Most of the things you hear from, you know, Drake and Lady Gaga and Rihanna and on TV, it's people that don't have your best interests at heart. They're trying to sell you something. Like I said, if you don't know in a room who the sucker is, you're the sucker. You don't ever want to be the sucker. Listen to what I'm saying. Go to the great minds of all time. Find 100 great books and read them over and over. I'm actually getting ready to post on my site the 100 most important books. Most people miss weighting bias. They read this dumb book, this one's a bestseller. Who cares about New York Times? I know more stupid New York Times bestseller. Find books that have stood the test of time. Read Freud, read Darwin, read you know, Stephen Hawking, read people that are civilization. Read Mahatma Gandhi. If you're in business, read Sam Walton. The man made $160 billion net worth for himself and his family, more than Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, Carlos Slim, all combined. One man. And his book on Amazon costs $5, called Made in America. Yet I almost never find a business person who's read it. I'm like, let me get this straight. Your brain is so full of cognitive biases that you've misweighted the priority. You want to read 4-Hour Work Week before Made in America? I'm not against Tim Ferriss by any means, but I think even he would agree he hasn't made $160 billion. Learn from Sam Walton, then read Grinding It Out from Ray A. Kroc. Read Arnold Schwarzenegger's biography, Total Recall. These are revolutionary people that have stood the test of time. They're not gimmicky. They're not, oh, we figured out one little cool title of a book and we sold 1 million copies of garbage, man. I go to Barnes & Noble a couple times a week. It's full of garbage. Don't let yourself be sold. The Sam Walton book is not that fancy. It's a little $5 hardcover book. Managing Oneself from Peter Drucker. I meet business people that haven't read Managing Oneself from Peter Drucker. I'm like, you ain't going nowhere. You don't want to download the consciousness of the most intelligent and most successful people who have stood the test of time and learned from their mistakes? Are you nuts? Or Are you proud? Because in the top five things in my top, my 67 steps to becoming a millionaire, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter into the kingdom. To me, I'm not a spiritual person in this religious sense. What that saying means to me is that if you're proud, you ain't going nowhere. Or if you read the Sam Walton story, he listened more than anybody. And in like 19... In like 1972, Sam Walton was still only had like $20 million of revenue. And he brought in five mentors to come, and they tore apart his business. They said, your shelves are wrong, your pricing's wrong. And he was humble enough. He said he almost resisted them, but he realized these were six. He brought in six of the top CEOs, former CEOs of his biggest competitors. He went every day into competitor store going, what do they know that I don't know? Man, humble. I told this story in my TED Talk. It's a great story. He went to Brazil to visit some friends, and his friends, his Brazilian friends got a phone call in Sao Paulo. They said, it was the police department. Can you come bail? They said, come get Sam Walton. He's in jail. We arrested him. They go down to the police station. They're like, what happened? What happened here? And Sam Walton says, the police say, well, we found this guy crawling around the floors of these stores, and we thought he was insane. And Sam Walton said, well, the reason I was doing it is I was trying to figure out if these Brazilians knew something that I didn't know. He was humble enough to get on his hands and knees in a foreign country, even though he was already a billionaire. So my question is, are you humble enough to do that? Don't tell me you're humble. Everybody says they're humble. Another helicopter here. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
I get these helicopters looking for criminals in Hollywood. When Arnold Schwarzenegger was the governor, he has a military helicopter that used to go by my house all the time, a couple times a week. But everybody says they're humble. Talk is cheap. Show me if you're humble. Yesterday, did you spend time around people 20 years ahead of you? If the answer is no, and it could be in a book, it could be in person, it could be on a YouTube video, it could be audio. I'm not just talking about TED Talks. Everybody likes TED Talks. That's not what I'm talking about. Go to the classics, the foundational stuff. Read the 100 most successful business people in order of most successful down. Start with, you know, J.P. Morgan, Rockefeller, Walton, Gates, and go down. Are those men perfect? Read Oprah's story. Read the lady who started Spanx, Sarah Blakely. They are not perfect. So some people are like, I don't want to read Sam Walton. I don't want to build a multinational company like Walmart. Follow. You could still learn stuff. Like in the Art of War, Sun Tzu says, if you only know yourself but not your enemy, for every step forward, you'll take a step backwards. For every battle you win, you'll lose a battle. Some people are afraid to study people that they don't completely want to emulate. You can still study them, even if they're your enemy. Be humble enough to go out and learn externally. Enough with the babbling about you, the truth is within. That's such a narcissistic thing. Now, again, is there some truth within? Of course, of course. There's place for original ideas, but it's a very cocky approach. Man, most of the people out there, look at Mark Zuckerberg. Did he really have a unique idea? He took MySpace. Did MySpace have an original idea? No, that was built off the guy who started Friendster. You can build. In fact, the third one usually becomes the wealthiest. Did WhatsApp have the first app to text? No. There was other apps. There was Viber and whatever. I don't even know all the names. Did Instagram have the first photo app? No. For the most part, building upon the shoulders of other people is how you become successful. But most people are not willing to do it because they're secretly very cocky. So that's a long answer to a short question. But most people are not willing to do it because they're secretly very cocky. So that's a long answer to a short question.
Wow. Okay. So I know you work with a lot of people, actually. And how do you find these people? How do you know they're the right person to work with, or even in some cases to partner with?
Well, I travel around the world, try to find people good at an industry that I'm already have momentum in. I usually look at the numbers, look at the profitability, and I meet the people. I've found the people at the top are usually the nicest, the most intelligent. It's much easier than you think to find the best. You know, where you get into trouble looking for business partners or to learn from is the middle. The middle is full of crappy people. The top's full of amazing people. So I try to go to straight to the top. I ask around, hey, who's the best guy in your industry? Warren Buffett has a good way. He says, go ask 10 companies. If you had to vote for the best person in your industry and you couldn't vote for yourself, who would you vote for? Make people tell you who's better than them. And if a whole bunch of people agree on one person, then that's probably the person to go out and emulate. In business, in terms of what I like to read, just go straight to the top. Go to Forbes list. Who made the most money? Sam Walton. Okay, start with the Sam Walton book. Read Larry Ellison's book. Read Bill Gates' book. Read Carlos Slim. You learn a lot. Same with love. Same with health. If you are in health, read Arnold Schwarzenegger's book first. The man was a 7-time Mr. Olympia with an incredible, you know, he changed the world in fitness. He made gyms popular. He changed the world. Was he a perfect guy? No, he's got this scandal about, you know, whatever, having a kid with his maid. To err is human, my friend. If you're looking, Gandhi had issues. Martin Luther King Jr., they were only humans. Oprah has issues. So do I. So I'm not looking for perfection. I'm looking for general directional, general models of thought, if that makes sense.
To switch the topic to marketing, where do you think the best opportunities for marketing right now? Because there's so much stuff going on. Should people be thinking forward towards mobile, or should they let other people test that out and still focus on the good old things that are working right now, like Google Ads and stuff like that?
Well, I think at some level it's a combination of going with the old school stuff and also definitely pioneering new stuff. There's money in finding cheap sources of advertising that people haven't all found. What's more important, because I don't want to, remember I said misweighting bias, I don't want to misweight it. The most important thing is for you to be a badass in what you do. I call it the law of 5%. On a scale of 1 to 100 in a competitive world, there's only room for 95s, 96s, 97, 98, 9900. I dated a girl who almost won American Idol, and I told her, I said, look, music is competitive. You can't be a 91. I mean, a 91, you're the best singer most people have ever heard, but the world doesn't go for pretty good or pretty amazing. The world goes for insanely amazing. So if you really want to know how to market stuff, you got to be badass in what you're selling. And that is where people, you know, the world doesn't need people good at marketing bad products. And most marketing, especially in the internet space, it's a bunch of blind people leading the blind, getting tricking people into buying stupid stuff. Don't concentrate on that. Forget that. Forget trying to make a quick buck. I've made a lot of money. I've lost a lot of money. I've made money. I've been poor. I've tried everything. Making money is cool, and it is definitely important, but I wouldn't override self-satisfaction of spreading what I call level 3 business. There's 3 kinds of businesses. Level 1 is a business where you make a lot of money, but you harm the world. To me, Coca-Cola, McDonald's, that's the problem. They're making a crap load of money. They're making multi-billions profit, but they're making people diabetic. How are you going to sleep with yourself? The one ironic thing, as much as I love Ray A. Kroc and grinding it out, you know, he's an amazing business guy, I found some irony in the fact that everybody was sick in his family. He had massive health issues, was diabetic. His daughter died of diabetes. I'm like, does anybody reading the coincidence? Now, I'm not a doctor. They might have had diabetes for other reasons, but it certainly doesn't help to be eating McDonald's food all the time. So forget level 1 business. If you're good at marketing, don't market a McDonald's level product. You know, level 2 business is a neutral product, like a hotel chain, like Conrad Hilton. He didn't improve the world or hurt the world by having hotels. You know, it's he made $1 billion and had a level 2 business. Focus on level 3. Think of Oprah Winfrey. Not only is she helping the world, but she made $2 billion. She has what's called a Pareto efficiency. That's another problem with a lot of internet entrepreneurs, whether it's the 4-hour workweek mentality or not. People are focused leading with money. Lead with your destiny. You'll be happier and you'll go further and you'll end up ironically making more money. You must lead with the product, and the product must be part of your destiny. If you pull that off, then, you know, like my richest business partner is not the happiest. It's not the happiest. You know, money is not in and of itself. I think money is more important than most people realize, but some people overemphasize the value. Focus on marketing stuff whether you're using mobile, AdWords, Facebook. You know, I was one of the first guys to use Google AdWords, 2001, March 2001. 2 weeks after AdWords officially launched, I was using it. Same thing with Facebook. I was in the beta program back, I forget what year, 08 or something. You know, I made millions of dollars with all those tools. It is important to get in relatively early. You don't need to be the first. Mobile will definitely be important in the sense that mobile is becoming the dominant form of people using internet connections. But it doesn't trump. Well, I'm going to put it to you this way. I got a buddy of mine in North Carolina. He made $93 million last year. He's 32 years old. He grossed $93 million. I don't know how much he netted, probably $15 million. He doesn't even have a website. So, you know, then I got guys that are in kings of making WordPress templates and themes and funnels and da-da-da, and they're making $150,000 a year. What he's good at is what he's doing. He's a master at what he's doing. That's where the money comes from. He markets it by word of mouth, doesn't even have a website. You literally can't even find out what he's doing, even though it would benefit him to have a website. First things first. That's one of the, and, you know, Stephen Covey, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. First things first. Prioritize. The first thing you should be focused on is doing your destiny, building massive amounts of skill, massive amount of knowledge. Over time, the marketing will fall into place. You can even, you know, bring people in that are, at any given time, there's different marketing channels at work. The best marketing channel is virality, word of mouth. Seth Godin in The Purple Cow talks about, of the 100 top brands, almost none of them, I think he said only one in the last 20 years has been built through advertising. That was AOL. Most of them, like Google, Facebook, these sped viral, Instagram, Twitter. They did not purchase TV commercials. They might have a few commercials. I mean, I don't think Facebook ever advertised. You want virality, and you get virality from a well-executed, well-designed plan, and the plan must be built around your destiny. When you do that, everything falls into place.
Okay. Have you heard of Gary Vaynerchuk? Do you buy into his ideas of giving stuff away for free?
Yeah. Joel Salatin was one of the first guys in direct marketing. If you read Omnivore's Dilemma, you know, changed the food system in the world. And he said the best way, especially when you're starting out, is give away stuff for free. There's a balance. Okay. I know guys that don't give things away for free at all, and they make more money than Gary Vaynerchuk. You know, so McDonald's doesn't give anything away for free. Yeah. Bill Gates gave things away for free, right? He had, you got the software downloaded on your computer. I think if it's a well-designed freemium model, you can make a lot of money. My friend started Plenty of Fish. It's a free dating site, and it's monetized over time through advertising and a freemium-type model with premium features. For sure, there's money, but there's also money in people that have a payment wall on day one. I got a buddy that nothing, doesn't give away much for free. In general, I think the world's going to a mindset, a zeitgeist, if you will, the spirit of the times, is that you need to give some things away for free. People are beginning to expect free things. I like the freemium model of my business, give away a lot of things for free and monetize the top 18% of highly engaged people. But there's no cut and dry. Be very careful when people tell you, oh, you can only make money that way. There's plenty of people charging for everything they do. I mean, look at Ferrari. They hardly give you, you try to get a test drive. You know, I've had a Ferrari, Maserati, all this. You try to go get a test drive, they don't want to give you a test drive. They're like, our brand sells itself. You either want it or you don't want it. So there's people making money at all levels of this game. A lot of things internet related are obviously going to a free. So, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk's sharp guy. As long as, be very careful of people giving 100, I don't know his stand on this, but whenever people say, oh, this is the way to make money. You know, for example, should you go into debt to grow your business? Well, some people are like, never go into debt. Warren Buffett doesn't like debt. But Sam Walton built the biggest company in America and wealthiest guy in the world through debt. But it was wise debt. He already had the business model perfected, and he was able to leverage each store that he opened. So be careful of black and whites. Humans love black and whites. They're like, oh, this is good, this is bad. That, by the way, is what's called a it's a cognitive bias. It is called the certainty bias. We want to be certain. Do not succumb to the certainty bias. Okay? You want to focus on the world's not about black and whites. It's about grays, unfortunately. We don't like it, but that's the way it is.
What is your opinion on the whole 4-hour work week thing?
So it's a very controversial thing. I don't have any personal thing against or for it per se. It's great marketing. The intent of it is very good. Unfortunately, as I go and consult around the world and work with top guys, I mean, first of all, look, what you want to follow is what's true. Do you honestly want to believe? Because remember, if you don't know who the sucker is, you're the sucker. Beware of perverse incentives. People trying to sell you something rarely have your best interest. Woo! I'm getting good at that. Rarely have your best interest at heart. So, it's clever marketing. Tim Ferriss admits that, right? He did a split test, and that's the headline that worked. Is it true that you can work 4 hours a day and be successful? Nope. Show me somebody who is. Ask Tim Ferriss how many hours he's working right now. There's one thing to make a little money for a year or two, and there's another thing to keep making money. Ask, my next door neighbor's Cameron Diaz. She's dating Elon Musk. Ask Elon Musk what he thinks about the concept of 4-hour working. Ask Warren Buffett. Ask Bill Gates. Don't ask me. Ask Steve Jobs. Do you think Steve Jobs said, well, what you want to do is figure out something that you only have to do 4 hours a week? Listen to his commencement speech at Stanford or Harvard when he was about to die. What did he say? Did he say anything about try to figure out what you can only do 4 hours a week and then go salsa dance across the world and do karate in China? I don't hear that message from great people. Do you think Mahatma Gandhi's like, you know what my goal is? I'm just going to chill here 4 hours a week. I'm going to help free India from colonial reign. Martin Luther King Jr. is like, you know what? Black people can't drink from the same water fountain. So I'm going to spend about 4 hours a week working on that problem. No, he devoted his life. Ask Bill Clinton. Ask Nelson Mandela. Ask any successful person. So if I saw, I'm like, you can say anything you want, but you got to back it up, my friend. I know a lot of people trying the 4. Show me the guys in the internet world working 4 hours a week making money over time. I don't care if you make $1 million 1 year, then you're broke the next 5 years. You want steady cash flow. Nobody does it. So first of all, my first objection to anything where there's no evidence except a book, I could write a book and say whatever I want. I could say work 1 hour a week. Why don't I come out with a book, work 1 hour a year? That's better than four. It's like in Something About Mary where he picks up the hitchhiker who's like, so what did the hitchhiker say? You know, I'm going to make 6 minute abs. And Ben Stiller goes, oh, well, why don't you make 4 minute abs? You know, and the guy's like, what do you mean? And by the way, Ben Stiller was my neighbor. He almost hit me. And I play basketball on the street over here. Yesterday or a couple days ago, he was driving his BMW around about 100 miles an hour. I swear he gave me the Zoolander face, man, when he saw me around the curve. Anyway, so my first problem is, you know, it's not true, which is should be enough for people. You know, don't you want the truth? Second of all, if I came to you and I said, look, man, I'm so excited. I met the girl of my dreams. We're getting married. And I got one other amazing thing to tell you about this relationship. I figured a way that I only have to spend 4 hours a week with her. You'd be like, well, why are you marrying her? Marry somebody you want to spend time with. Remember what Pablo Picasso, don't take my word. He said, avoid the dichotomy where you do what you don't like in order to make money to do what you do like. What it sounds like to me is Pablo Picasso would say, avoid the 4-hour work week mentality. Do you think Picasso wanted to work 4 hours a week? Who would you rather be? Who do you think's happier? There's a good book by a researcher, very famous on happiness. His name is Martin Seligman. Read his book, Authentic Happiness. Here's what Martin Seligman says. He studied happiness, both on a neurological brain scanner level and in all his research. I think he's at Dartmouth University. And he says, what makes people happy is not hedonic momentary pleasure like, oh, I'm laying on a beach right now. Some of the unhappiest people in the world are people who inherit $100 million. I know a guy, I'm an acquaintance with a guy here in Hollywood who owns the Neptunes, Mary J. Blige and all that. He inherited like $400 million. He's not that happy. I wouldn't want to be him. I'd much rather be Mahatma Gandhi, because internally what Martin Seligman, the professor, says is if you're being pushed your hardest, where you have to work your hardest towards a goal and it's attainable and you're benefiting civilization and benefiting yourself at the same time, that's what people happy. who takes the most vacations. It's a lie. It's not backed up by science. It's not backed up by research. Show me somebody. I know everybody. Almost every – I do huge parties, some of the biggest parties in Hollywood Hills. Every internet person almost you can name has ended up in my house. None of them work 4 hours. So one of the things I got to tell people, like I said, let me be clear. Tim Ferriss has done tremendous good. Tremendously smart guy, I'm sure. I don't know him personally. You can't argue with the success of his books. I think there's a deep-seated flaw, unfortunately, in the concept, even a four-hour body. Let's take four-hour body. You think you want to copy Arnold Schwarzenegger? I always tell people, just look at the results and copy it. Who do you want to look like? Arnold Schwarzenegger or somebody or Tim Ferriss? I'd rather look like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Whose wealth do you want? Whose civilization-changing lifestyle do you want? Bill Gates or some internet guy that figures out how to make 10 grand a month on autopilot and he's salsa dancing in Thailand right now? That guy's not going to be happy. It doesn't make you happy, man. If you don't believe me, look at the science. Read books of Daniel Kahneman. Read the book Social by the Daniel, I forget his name, the Harvard guy. Read books by evolutionary psychologist David Butt. What makes us happy? Read Happiness Hypothesis by Jonathan Haidt. You're happy by finding your superpower and doing it a lot, man. Just like you're happy by finding in love by finding a friend who's a soulmate who you want to spend a lot of time with. You're happy in love by finding a girl or a guy that matches with you that you want to spend more than 4 hours with. It's really the opposite. Elon Musk says when everybody else is working 40 hours, if you work 100 hours, you'll accomplish quadruple what everybody else does. Triple, I should say. You know, he said he'll do in 3 months what takes most people a year. I'm not sure the math was exact right there, but you get my point, right? So most important thing, all these other things are irrelevant. I don't even, you know, I'm not anti 4-hour work week. It's just not part of my mentality. Even if Tim Ferriss turns out to be the right guy and everybody else was wrong, I don't care. I'm going to play the hand of poker that's in front of me that has the best statistics of winning. For me right now, the best statistics is copying the best people. I don't want to copy somebody who makes $10 million a year. I want to copy somebody who makes $10 billion. I don't want to copy somebody who sells a lot of books. I want to copy somebody who ends segregation in South Africa like Nelson Mandela. I don't want to copy the body of a guy who looks like he's in great, pretty good shape. I want to copy the body of a guy who's a 7-time Mr. Universe. Doesn't mean I want to be Mr. Universe. Doesn't mean I want to be Nelson Mandela. Doesn't mean I want to be Bill Gates, but I caught the law of 10%, meaning you probably only get 10% of whoever you copy. The average 4-hour work week person is copying somebody who makes $1 million a year. That means at best they're going to make 100,000. Copy the best. It's just as easy. You want to learn to play basketball? You want to copy me? In high school, I was one of the best basketball players in the U.S. Compared to Michael Jordan, I'm the worst basketball player you'll ever play against. You want to copy me? I'm pretty good. Or you want to copy Michael Jordan? Why copy me? It's a horrible plan. Statistically, it's like poker. Who do you think is going to win that hand? The guy who's been emulating Michael Jordan or the guy who's been emulating me? I'm going to bet every time on the guy who spent 10 years copying every – Kobe Bryant, he copies Michael Jordan. This is what you want. Copy the best. So I'm not anti 4-hour work week and I'm not pro 4-hour work week. I'm neutral. And the evidence to me is not even remotely out that it's accurate. I'm all about accuracy. I'm not about right or wrong. I'm about accurate. Is it accurate? I find it to not be highly accurate. Maybe it is for some people and I'm not going to argue with everybody, but like I said, whenever I ask people to show me the proof, people start going, It's like when I said, show me the proof of people who learned inward. People are like, well, Tesla. And I'm like, well, did you ever read about Tesla? You know, somebody said Eckhart Tolle. I'm like, did you ever read about Eckhart? He learned from other people. Show me some evidence, man. I'll show you evidence for what I'm talking about. Bill Gates said from age 20 to age 30, I never took one day off, not even one. He would sleep at the office basically for 10 straight years. Whose results do you want? Bill Gates? He has the respect of the world, presidents. He has the respect of the most influential people. He's made the most money. He's happily married. He's got kids. He's got an 80-bedroom house, but yet he drives a Prius, so he's not completely consumed by materialism. And he's changing civilization. Who do you want to be, man? I know who I'm going to emulate. It's up to you. You make the choice.
Okay. So for the next part, I'm going to give you a short list of books that I like. It's actually my favorite. You like this part,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It's actually just 5 books, so to make it short and easy, you know. And you can just review them. Just
okay.
Like you did the 4-hour work week. So the first one is Thank You Economy. The second one is Tribal Leadership. Do you want me to just list all of them?
Yeah, list all.
So Thank You Economy, Tribal Leadership, Purple Cow, Willpower Instinct, and Ogilvy and Advertising.
So, Ogilvy and Advertising? Yeah, here's the thing. So out of all of those, I like the Ogilvy the best because he stood the test of time and built an advertising empire. My biggest thing is for you, my advice before I analyze necessarily the list is go, if I told you in your backyard right now, there were 10 treasure chests. One had $1 billion, one had $1 million, and one had 1,000. And I showed you where they are. This one's, you got to dig a hole here. This one, you got to dig a hole here. Which one do you got to dig? This one, you got, one's going to make you $1 billion for digging. One's going to make you $1 million and one's going to make you 1,000. What would you do if your little brother went outside and started digging first at the $1,000 treasure chest? Would you stop him and say, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, I'd throw him to the $1 billion chest, basically.
But think about it. He could argue with you. He could say, well, look, $1,000, I don't have any money. I'm 10 years old. $1,000 is a lot of money. He could argue with you, but what you would say is opportunity cost, my friend. Opportunity. What if you only had 1 hour to dig? See, we only have at best, your prime is maybe 50 years. You're limited by time. I used to think life is like chess. It's not like chess. It's like timed chess. Regular chess, you have unlimited moves. But you and I are limited. Our telomeres in our cells are getting longer. Every year, the replication mutations are happening. We're going to get hit by something. We're going to get hit by a car or hit by cancer or die of old age and heart failure. We all die of heart failure at some point, right?
Yeah.
So your life's short. You're like your little brother. I'm asking you, why are you digging in the $10,000 hole instead of the billion? The $1,000 hole is fine. The book Thank You Economy is fine. The book, you know, Seth Godin stuff is fine. But my first question before I answer that is, have you read Made in America by Sam Walton?
No, I haven't.
Have you read Grinding It Out by Ray A. Kroc? Have you read Total Recall? Have you read the autobiography of Mahatma Gandhi? Have you read about Martin Luther King Jr.? Have you read about Steve Jobs and Bill Gates? Have you read their books? Because I recommend, have you read Carnegie's book, Rockefeller book, JP Morgan's book? Start there. And then if you got time in your 50 years of prime of your life to read the Thank You Economy, read them. Now, some people go, well, I like to read up and coming books. What I recommend you do on some of these books, read them real fast. Like just glance through Thank You Economy. Most of those books, you can get everything you need to know from like 20 pages. Remember, when they go to publishers with one good idea, the publisher is like, you got to write a whole book around it. I can't sell a 5-page book. But read a summary of those books. That's why I do these book of the day. Again, if you guys want on tylopez.com, you can get my free book summaries. Read, let someone else waste their time and read those books. You focus on the 100 most important books. Once you're through those, then you can give yourself permission to read, you know, some dumb books. Now, or some fun books, I should say. There, it's okay every day. I spend sometimes, I just read Adam Carolla's book, President Me. It's a funny book. It's not more important than Darwin or Freud's book, but it's okay to read some recreationally. Just make sure you're focused on avoiding the misweighting bias. Read the first things first. Best book first. Seth Godin, I like. I think he's okay. I mean, Ogilvy, I like better. He seems to be more profound to me. Thank You Economy, I have that book. I haven't read it. I have so many books I should read, but like I said, today I was reading this morning Pascal, the Great Philosopher. Read some of those. Buy the Harvard Classics. Buy the Yale Classics. Read those books first. Make sure you read a little Nietzsche, a little Freud, a little Wittgenstein, a little... I find Freud to be the most intelligent writer of all time. Darwin certainly was. Make sure you read a little bit. Now, some people are like, oh, I don't want to read all Freud. Don't read all Freud. Just read Civilization and its Discontents. Read it slowly. So those books are okay. They're more like neutral to me. I'm not excited by them. I'm not maybe the Ogilvy book. I like him. But you know, I think you're shortchanging your life. Put it that way. Go for the $1 billion dig, man. Better life.
What about the fact that the Think Economy guy and the Tribal Leadership guy, they actually researched the top companies and the top billionaires. So they tried to condense all that knowledge in one book.
So that's like Jim Collins, who I do like. Here's the thing. I've tried that way of reading books like Dale Carnegie. Everybody loves Dale Carnegie book, which is great, right? You know, how to win friends and influence people and all those books. I don't necessarily find that better than just reading the source. Like, I've read textbooks about Freud. Boy, read Freud for yourself. The man was a genius, even if he was not correct on everything. Before Freud came around, we didn't even know that the mind had a subconscious. He wasn't perfect. Of course, we've built on that. But if you want to read Dale Carnegie research, you know, Rockefeller, read about Rockefeller yourself. Then read the summaries. So, you know, Thank You Economy, that's great. Jim Collins is great. But I'd rather read Sam Walton for myself. And I've experimented with both approaches, and I find incredibly more value than hearing it straight from the source. The sources are the ones who did it, man. Who do you think knows more about business, the guy who summarizes it or the guy who did it? Who would you want your mentor, a university professor who studied Sam Walton, or would you rather have Sam Walton? Who's going to give you decision making? Remember, the summarizer doesn't know what you need for your life. When you read the source, you can pull out, ooh, this is what I need for my life today, what Rockefeller said about this or what Buffett said about this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. So let's move on to a completely different topic now. It's nice to talk to you because you know so many topics so well.
So I pretend just, I do.
What are the rules to being an investor?
So the first rule of being an investor is stop being a consumer. Average American has $33,000 in car debt, $207,000, I think, right around there in overall debt, counting mortgages. Stop being a consumer. One of my mentors when I was about 19, 20 years old, Gordon Hazard, he said, Ty, never invest, put your money in things that rust, rot, and depreciate. The first rule of an investor is the more you learn, the more you earn. Spend 30% of your disposable income after you pay your expenses and your taxes on education. Read, buy audiobooks, go to seminars, pay to have mentors flown in, whatever, join mastermind, I have an academy. I'll plug my academy. I build an academy, Millionaire Mentor Academy. It's not that expensive. Join stuff like that. Not just mine, but I met a guy once, Romeo. It was funny. I was at this conference. He, multimillionaire guy. We went to lunch and he told me his story. He'd been a painter, built a big painting company. And out of that painting company, he sold it, made, I don't know how much money, millions of dollars. Then he got bored and decided he wanted to get into real estate. And he said, you remember painting these mansions and was like, those guys made it in real estate. Let me learn real estate. So I said, how'd you learn? He said, well, I went out and I went to every seminar, traveled around the world. I took the top seminar. Like if they had a package for 50 grand, I would buy it. Went to Tony Robbins and Donald Trump and blah, 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 all these different ones. And I was like, he told me the list. It was a huge list. I said, man, how much money did you spend on this? He said, $1 million I spent on conference. I said, was it worth it? He said, hell yeah. Now I know how to make $1 million in a week doing short sales. So that must be, that's the investor mentality. Most people though, put their money in things that rust, rot, and depreciate. They're putting their money in TVs, cars, clothes. The day you buy a car, new car, it goes down in value 40%. That's the sucker. Who's the sucker in that situation? You're the sucker. Invest in stuff that doesn't rust, rot, and depreciate. I was with Gordon Hazard. We're driving around a farm. He was a big rancher, one of the wealthiest men in Mississippi and in America. And he, old guy, 80 years old or so. And he said, Ty, you see all that land I own out there, those 3,000 acres? Every day I go to sleep, and when I wake up, it's a little bit more valuable. It went up in value. He said, you see those cows out there, those 1,000 cows? Every day, the sun shines, the rain falls, those cows eat the grass from the rain and the sun, and they get a little heavier, and I sell them by the pound. So every day I wake up, those cows are a little bit heavier, and I got more money. They appreciate. They go up. He said, Ty, I only own three things that rust, rot, and appreciate. He said, this pickup truck, we were driving an old pickup truck. said, a shovel and a hammer. And he said, if times get tough, I can sell the hammer. He was saying, don't ever invest in things that rust, rot, or depreciate. Put all your wealth into things that are going up in value. That's the mindset of investor. That's where you start. Start thinking about return on investment, not on cost. This friend Romeo, when he put that $1 million into real estate, the average person, the poor friends of mine, would see that's a cost, $1 million cost. The rich friends of mine go, that's an investment, and good investments have a high ROI, return on investment. IRR, internal rate of return. You want something with ROI. That's the beginning and the foundation. And beyond that, you know, read Benjamin Graham's books on, investing, The Intelligent Investor. There's various books. There's a lot on investment out there, but start with the basics. It's the opposite of investor is a consumer. Most of the world's a consumer. I said, wide is the path that leads to destruction. Narrow is the path that leads to where you want to go. Go down the path, my friend, you know. Put money in. I tell people, you make $1,000, spend $300 on education as soon as you get it. Most people make $1,000, they buy $1,000 worth of clothes, $1,000, you know, it's like, why? I was talking to this, I do a lot of stuff. I own one of the biggest modeling networks in the world. And this girl that I was out with her the other day, and she's one of the top Ford models. And she was like, when I was young, I went to Japan and made like $60,000. I was like 18. And I spent $17,000 on clothes in the first week. See, she was a consumer, not an investor. Multiply every dollar you spend by 15. That's probably the lifetime value if you had been a good investor. So if you buy a car for $10,000, multiply by 15. It's probably a $150,000 opportunity cost that you could have put in something else. Trust me, I've made a lot of mistakes in this. I've made some good choices too. Don't waste your money, man. Every dollar you get. Now, it doesn't mean you have to be cheap. Buy a mansion. Mansions go up in value. You know, Mike Tyson's my neighbor. I see him sometimes and I always want to ask him, how does it feel to have made $400 million and lost it all? Because he spent $10 million, I read, on one birthday party. The next day you wake up, it's depreciated. You put $10 million in, it's over. I said, how could you lose $400 million, man? Put it all into houses. Even Ferraris hold their value. If he had bought $100 million worth of Ferraris, some Ferraris go up in value. If you're going to put your money in something, always be thinking, what's the ROI compared to what else I could put it in? That's the basics of investing 101. And that's hard, and understand opportunity cost. What else could you be investing in? That's what I was saying about your books. Think about your books like an investor, where people get messed up with your books, not thinking like an investor. You're saying, what do you think of these five books? As if they're in their standalone imaginary world. No, they're in a comparative world. What's the ROI compared to 5 hours spent on five different books? Much higher, much higher.
So you actually hang out with all these investors, and yep. You once told me they're on a higher level than business owners. I think it was you told me that.
Yeah, investors. Yeah. Investors. So entrepreneurs. So, yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
So what can the business owners who are watching this video, what can they learn from investors?
Stop calling yourself an entrepreneur. Call yourself an investor. Out of the 440 or so self-made billionaires in the world, 70 of them, or 77, I think, are investors. No category is as high as investors. Real estate people aren't as high. Tech people aren't as high. Sports people aren't as high. Oil, none of that makes more billionaires than investors. So even if you are an entrepreneur, consider yourself an investor. That's what you want to do. Always see yourself, I'm an investor. I'm an investor. I'm an investor. Call yourself an investor. Introduce yourself as an investor. Then they go, what do you invest in? You could say, well, I'm investing in a business that I started right now. It's a mentality switch. It's a simple kind of semantic switch, but it's an important one.
And also, how do you connect with the right people? How did you connect with these billionaires, for example? How do you connect with the right mentors for your business?
To get what you want, you got to deserve what you want. To get billionaires to give you their time, you got to be an interesting person. Read a book. People want to be around other intelligent people. Build a skill. I was good at things. Skilled people, people will always make room for you in their car. They'll always make room for you at their dinner table. They'll always make room for you in your schedule. If you've got nothing to offer, remember, humans respond to reciprocal bias. You must be able to reciprocate. Obviously, if you're hanging out with billionaires, you can't offer them $1 billion. They're richer than you. Give them something else. You know, when I was younger, I was in nightclubs. A lot of rich guys wanted to hang around me because I had beautiful girls around. As I got more skilled in things, billionaires wanted to be around me because I had some angle that they didn't know, some little thing I didn't know. They also want to be around me. Be a nice person. Be giving. Be persistent. Most people want what they don't deserve. The world is not, as Munger says, the world is not yet a crazy enough place to reward people who are undeserving. If you don't deserve to be in the company of interesting people, you won't be. Read is the simplest way. Become interesting. You know, get good at what you do. That, there will always be a place then for a mentor to spend time with you.
Okay. Well, Ty, I mean, you're a very good speaker and your knowledge is just mind-blowing, so I hope all the viewers enjoyed it as well. So, if they want more from you, they want to get more from you, what can they do?
Well, it's a simple thing. I just launched my podcast. It's under Ty Lopez, Grand Theory of Everything, on iTunes, Stitcher, BlackBerry Network. So Grand Theory of Everything, my name, Ty Lopez. I would love it. If you guys want to leave me a review, I love the reviews there. Subscribe to my podcast. My YouTube, I'm starting to post a lot of stuff. It's under Ty Lopez Official. I've got 170,000 Twitter followers, a pretty big Twitter following. So it's at Ty Lopez, Instagram. And then my website is probably the central place. You can get everything from tylopez.com. If you're on my homepage, tylopez.com, when you come there, you'll see a pop-up that asks you if you want to get the 67 steps to being a millionaire. Even if you don't want to be a millionaire, it's 67 steps to being highly successful, whether you want to start a charity, become an artist, become an actor, become a musician, you know, sports, you're into sports, whatever it is, it applies. So go to tylopez.com. That's a great place to start for almost everybody. Join my newsletter. It's free. There's 1.5 million people on it. And then check out my podcast. Check out my YouTube. My social networks, I post a lot of stuff on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Now, for those of you people who are highly interested, check out my Millionaire Mentor Academy. There's nothing like it on the planet. It's all built. Everything I took from self-made millionaires, okay? And it's a step-by-step program. It's a white to black belt level, okay? So wherever you are, white, yellow, blue, purple, brown, black. It'll take you from, if you don't even have a business now but you want, you can start at the white belt level. Black belt level is built around stuff if you want to make 9-10 figures. You want to make $100 million, $1 billion. It's what I've learned from my business partners, from my experience, from, you know, investing and all those things. And it's not just my stuff, but it's what I've learned from my mentor. So Millionaire Mentor Academy, there's a link when you go to Ty Lopez. You can get that. That I charge money for that. So that's why I said, some of you who just want some free stuff, I give away a ton of stuff free. I'm like Gary Vaynerchuk, but probably beyond that. I mean, I write 7,000 word essays that I give for free summarizing books. But for those of you highly engaged, I can guarantee you this. You'll never see anything like this Millionaire Mentor Academy. You want to make money. You want to change the world with a level 3 business. Check that out on my website. You can also email me. I check my email, ty@tylopez.com. If you happen to be at Hollywood, about every 3 months, I throw a party up in my house. I got a big house, 8-bedroom house in the Hollywood Hills. You got to email me for that. Can't let everybody in. Don't try to sneak in. I got a guy at the door is 6'7", former Kim Kardashian's Porter bodyguard. He's got a bigger biceps than Arnold Schwarzenegger. So don't try to sneak in, but you can email me at ty@tylopez.com. Happy to let people in. There's a link on my website to my parties. Got some videos. If you want to see what the Hollywood glamour life is like, it's fun stuff. I don't do them that much anymore because last one I did had 2.5 miles of people blocking the hills trying to get to my house. So my buddies at LAPD are like, you can't do these too often. You're going to end up in trouble. So. But I am doing one upcoming, and check out my speaking schedule. My TED Talk will be – you can check out my TED Talk under my name, Ty Lopez, you know, some stuff from London Business School. There's all kinds of stuff. And email me, though. Questions. I love to answer questions. ty@tylopez.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Ty.
Thanks, man. I hope it's been helpful. Thanks for hanging with me on the good old Skype.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon.
All right, this was our show for today. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. If you like it, I'll see you next time. If you'd like to find out more about me, visit vitkin.net. That's vitkin.net. Thank you for listening to this show, and see you next time.